This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our guest is Seema Reza. She's shaking up the world with her poetry and her poetry activism. But she's a poet first and foremost. And here she is with an opening poem.
Hate Academy. You know things I did not teach you. Teach me things I don't know. About the Knights of Camelot and Abraham Lincoln. Tectonic plates and the remote control. Read this, you say. Read this. You hand me a book I haven't read, open to a passage about the British Hate Academy. An idea born to prevent shell shock, soldier's heart, PTSD. Desensitizing young men by showing them, teaching them to crave kill before they know the cost. You read over my shoulder, shake your head, waiting, certain this is yet another thing I simply do not know. I close the book, inhale, unsurprised. They still do this. I hide my fingers in your hair. You put your head on my shoulder. Tears form in the corners of your eyes. I watch an innocence I had forgotten. Leave you. I press my lips to your forehead. It doesn't work, not for any length of time. That's why it hurts when they come home. I whisper a promise I cannot keep. We will end wars with love. You look up at me, half smile, kiss my cheek. Mistake this far reach for an innocence of my own. Again, the burden of telling me what you know and I don't is upon you. It won't work, Mama. There's too many of them.
Seema Reza, reading from her book, A Constellation of Half Lives, she will get you by the heart and you will be hers forever if you read this book. We get a sense of, that is very seminal, the poem you read, and it's very much your tone. But in your own words then, what is the entire book about?
The entire book is about this sort of exploration of the uneven distribution of grace in the world.
Wow. And how does that show up? I mean, there's a lot there. Your mission in life has been around rescuing soldiers, actually. Your mission in life has been as a nurturer of those who have been wounded, and that comes out in this book. And would you say it's a political book? Would you say it's a personal book?
I mean, well, of course, the personal is political, right? We are shaped by these decisions that are made far above and away from us. You know, I bring up taxpaying several times in the book.
You do.
And yeah, and one of the sort of editorial notes I got as I was going through was like, oh, there's a lot of poems about paying your taxes. And there are, because I think of the way that that makes me complicit in the decisions of my government.
And I'll tell you, you are not. And so let's hear another poem just to prove it. I just want the audience to think, how can a woman be so unashamed of words, so able to say the truth? And I want you to think of that as she reads, because it is what I thought of as I read.
Dear Khadija, American Violence. Has news of the killings reached you yet? Last week, soldiers barricaded the mouths of city streets with tanks while our children lifted signs and screamed for their lives. We lined behind, gape-mouthed, helpless, then trudged peacefully home to pay bills, wash our cars, and eat sweet fatty things on soft chairs facing our televisions. Outside, the clouds stretched west toward us. This year, not one of the schoolyard children remembers when the war began or why. More sons and daughters have been carried limp from our schools than their mothers and fathers have been draped in a striped flag and shipped flat from armed tours of your dusty city streets. Do you shrug or smile at this, Khadija? The first instruction of active shooter lockdown, fire drills are outdated, is turn off the lights, make yourself disappear. Dial your mother, whisper goodbye. When the gunman opens the door to fire into the cowering silence, pop up, surprise party style, create chaos, lift and launch heavy books. Hail Mary, the news will name you martyr. The mother of a martyr is martyr herself.
Mm.
Do you shrug or smile at this, Khadija?
Sima Reza, here at the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri. To whom are you addressing that poem?
This poem is part of a cycle of poems in the book addressing an imagined, though not quite fictional, woman named Khadija who is living directly in the path of the global war on terror and, you know, is the mother of a child who has been killed as a result of our time there.
And when is it that you became so filled with the world that you took responsibility for it? Your work in the world, working with wounded soldiers and those returning, giving poetry workshops for them, your writing about this, your obsession with it, a good obsession. Mm-hmm. When did that start?
Well, I mean, obviously, to some degree, I was born a poet. I was born with this very, very soft heart. And I remember on 9/11, my son was just a year old, and we were outside painting in under this beautiful blue sky. And there was this, you know, shift in the world, and I organized my first community event after that.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't think of anything to do but to bring people together, and we did an interfaith vigil, and I'd never done anything like that, an interfaith community vigil in Rockville Town Center. And my impulse was to build community, to bring community together. And it was a long time after that before I began doing this work. But I often hear stories of people who felt the call to join the military right after 9/11. And just as they had that call, my call was to build community with people unlike myself.
And you have every day of your life, Sima Reza. She is a poet and essayist. Her book, Where the World Breaks Open, is a memoir. I started reading it, and I thought, well, I'll just read a little bit. And I could not stop. It took me all night. It is gripping. It is real. It is true. She is shameless in her ability to write. She has written, as we have described, a constellation of half-lives, which you're hearing today. And she is in charge of community-building artworks, an arts organization that encourages the use of the arts as a tool for self-care among a military population struggling with emotional and physical injuries. She has been awarded the Patriot Award by the USO of the Metropolitan Washington, Baltimore area. Her writing has appeared many places, including Bellevue Literary Review, Green Mountain Review, the LA Review, the Feminist Wire. I'm not surprised about that mm-hmm. one. Her Kind, The Offing, and Entropy, among others. She's an essayist, she's a writer, and she's an activist. And not anything suffers by cutting them in half. But she's our poet today. We're at the Library of Congress. And so let's go on with another poem. Let's do The Crown now. Okay. What is A Crown of Sonnets?
So A Crown of Sonnets is a series of sonnets that are connected, in which the last line of one sonnet, which just going by the rule of 14 lines for the sonnet, the last line of one sonnet becomes the first line of the next.
And what is the purpose of that? I mean, what does that do for you?
For me, for this, I began writing it. I took one of those wonderful Split This Rock masterclass.
Do they really work?
Oh, amazing. It was, so they bring these really great poets in and you pay $100 for 2 hours, a 2 hour workshop with them. And this was with Danez Smith, who spoke about The Crown and gave us a lot of examples, and I began it. And what I love about, and I didn't follow The Crown properly, the sort of ideal is to then take all of those last lines that you've repeated and turn them into one poem.
At the end.
That is the jewel, sort of, in The Crown, the 15th
so
poem.
So we have a poem, a sonnet, and the last line of the sonnet will begin the first line of the next sonnet. And then it gains momentum and it gets deeper and deeper that way and enriches, gets farther and further into you. Let's just hear a taste of how one poem intersects with the next.
Sure.
And it's a 14-part poem, by the way.
Which is like plenty of space to think about something really, really big, which is what's so wonderful and compelling about this form. Mistakes in the shape of a person.
Mm-hmm.
I need him to believe so I can too. I put him on a plane and drive away. Stop at the ocean's edge, stand with my hands on my own shoulders. Further south, a man honks from the next lane, then follows. As I turn at the park, drive past my destination until he gives up or tires of the sport. Ma, you were right. Without a father in the driver's seat, without a husband or a diamond ring, I am nothing but a pile of neatly folded promises.
So that is one sonnet. And then we hear the next.
I dream terrible things. I am nothing but a pile of neatly folded promises. A regular woman, tax-paying nurturer. I am afraid of coming unzipped. I long to unleash my teeth. Unencumbered. Without the tension of gratitude and repulsion for my body. I don't often tell stories about him, but sometimes I shine light on a glimmer and stir the undercurrent of regret. A sediment of rage rests beneath, which, disturbed, waits the floating feather of anecdote.
I see in that 14-part poem so much going on. Your father is there. And we get that feeling of relationship. A mother is mentioned. You also your own romantic inclinations. And they all come together miraculously. How did that happen? Did you just start writing one and then saw where it would take you? Or did you have an idea?
It was a little bit of both. I was trying to think about two things. One is, why the feeling of the experience of really great beauty, watching your children sleep or standing at the top of a mountain looking down at the sea, why it also sort of evokes this deep grief and its relationship to impermanence. And then I was thinking about how at 9 months old, a child learns object permanence. And they're not afraid or surprised anymore when you hide and come back, right? This is this growth. And wondering if actually that's the lie. The permanence is the lie, right? We sort of unlearn impermanence and our joy is shrunk as well as our grief being shrunk.
So it starts with a feeling.
Yes.
It starts with that feeling. And you are trying to define that and understand how this is. And so, because words are your paradigm, that led you. But it was the feeling. That interests me. We always start with a feeling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The feeling and then trying to capture images of that represent the feeling, right? Which is what poetry is. And the images took me through, you know, my father and my, you know, obviously moments with my son and my mother and my own moments of being somebody's mother and how that's different from how I experience being me, how I am experienced as
that
this,
is in the book
role.
That's very powerfully a theme in the book. And let's have another poem to tell who you are at the Library of Congress with Seema Raisa.
Exclusions. An envelope marked important contains my new insurance policy. I scan the pages and catch the word war under the heading exclusions. I am unconcerned. War does not come to Maryland. War hatches across the river in solemn buildings filled with suits and flies across the ocean to nest in the land of my children's ancestors. Bundled beneath the blankets under the humming blades of the ceiling fan, my son leans his head against my shoulder. I balance a cup of coffee, the first of the day's quiet luxuries. The sky lightens, and we listen to the radio. A missile whistles to landing. A bazaar breaks out in gunfire. A car explodes, taking down a wall. His long eyelashes cast shadows on ruddy cheeks, still sticky from yesterday's dessert.
Oh, how you put big things and small things together. And let's have another. I find the woman is very predominant in this book, the matriarch, the relationship with you and your mother, and what women mean to you. And as a feminist, you hark back to your ancestors, and they are in Bangladesh, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have, how has that culture influenced your life, even though you are an American?
We went back very frequently growing up to Bangladesh, and there was always a sense that I was not from Bangladesh when I was in Bangladesh.
Interesting.
And not from America when I was in America. So there's this, you know, and that's the immigrant experience. And I often, you know, tell this joke about my mother being like, okay, we can live here, but don't trust anybody. And this sort of sense of like trying to protect us. So this next poem I'll read is about that, is about her, and it begins in my mother's voice, and she objects to some parts of this poem, but I swear it's all true. And the poem is called 1995. You can tell an American child by their shoes. Americans keep their shoes dirty, but a child just trying to look American will keep her sneakers pristine. My mother is full of observations of white Americans and brown ones like me, American to spite their parents. Sometimes she thinks we have no loyalty or generosity or couth. Other times she says they are clean, but still. I'm not to share their pants or sit on their toilets, she warns. They wear their shoes all over the house. Their dining tables are cluttered with papers because they don't eat food. Americans, my mother tells me, don't care about their mothers. Whatever they might say, they think less of us. She warns me, and I don't believe her. When yet another American boy discards my heart in favor of one who I'm sure does not have hair on her knuckles, she says, I don't know why you're so hopeful and soft-hearted. It's not my fault.
I believe that poem with all my heart. But I want to know why you are so hopeful and soft-hearted. There has to be a reason. You are hopeful because you keep thinking you can restore everything.
Yeah.
And you're doing a pretty good job of it. So that now is the time that we can tell everyone what you do on your day job. And that is that you created the idea of helping veterans through the arts, through poetry. And you actually established an organization and went to the Defense Department. And so just sum it up in one sentence.
So, you know, I developed this program under DOD funding, under a DOD contract for many years. And it began to be chipped away at and changed. And so we began with a group of other artists and veterans, began a nonprofit called Community Building Artworks. And we bring writing, art, music, improv workshops into treatment programs at Fort Belvoir and Walter Reed, as well as open sessions there, and then community events where folks can bring their
truths. And you're in a hospital. What do you do in a hospital?
So the writing workshops that I lead are within treatment programs, so within day treatment programs for substance abuse and post-traumatic stress and military sexual trauma and, you know, the whole host of things that people experience on this planet. But in the military, it's sort of like very concentrated. And I think that there is, you know, I always sort of brace at this, at the language of helping, because I think that they are, this folks that serve in our military have this clearer picture of the world than most of us in America do. You know, the poem I read earlier, American Violence, about school shootings, came out of my sudden fear of sending my sons to school on Monday mornings. On Sunday, I would have this deep grief. And here, just yesterday, you could air this any day. And when I say just yesterday, there was another shooting, it will apply. But that wasn't always how it was here. But that sort of sense of what's at stake is so clear in the military space that I feel really like we have to amplify those voices.
Do you see actual change?
Yes.
You do?
I do. I see, I think I couldn't, because we also see real loss, you know? The veteran suicide numbers.
22 a day. It is 22 a day.
It's 22 a day. And just this Monday, I got word of two former participants having committed suicide from some years back. And it's a blow.
Of course it is a blow. You have not only your own personal belief in them, but and your friendship with them, but there's a lot at stake.
Yeah. But for every really, really absolutely devastating story, there are people who I just watch over the course of really weeks of not just writing, of course, of receiving all kinds of really important behavioral therapy.
Uh-huh. And do you think that the arts can change lives?
I do. Mm-hmm. I think knowing it's really hard to look honestly at yourself and at your vulnerabilities and then otherize someone else, right?
Good way to put it. Yes. And I think that vulnerability is strength. And we're just beginning to know that. And you know how we know that? Because the artists tell us this, because they show us their truth and their secrets without being afraid to. And that is raising consciousness everywhere, because then we realize that that is your strength, because that's where people cross the bridge and say, oh, if you felt that, I just never said it out loud. You know, that is a very powerful bridge you're building.
Thank you.
And let's hear a bridge of poems. See, Marisa, I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress. How many workshops do you do in a week?
I do a workshop almost every day of the week, at least one, sometimes two. I've also just started doing some writing workshops within the prison system, in correctional facilities. And that's a really, that's a harder space. You know, I feel like we in America have a sense of real respect for veterans, but it's not the same. We, you know, we really are throwing human lives away in a really disturbing way. So
how often do you do that?
So this is my second time doing a series. So I do that on Fridays right now for just a couple more weeks. Friday in the morning, I work with the young men, 18 to 22, so right around my son's age. And then in the afternoon, I get to go in and write with women who are between 16 and 60. They are me.
Let's hear a poem.
Fortune. I am not supposed to know what it means to pass someone the AK. I am not supposed to know that sometimes people get killed because we all look alike, and retaliation does not always require accuracy. I am an American civilian. I am absolutely not supposed to know how often a child holding a gun or a child holding a cell phone or a child holding a long string attached to a paper kite rocking in the sky is shot and killed in my name. I am not supposed to know that there's no way out of this, that 4,000 more troops is the integer, some undetermined number is the exponent, and the figure represents nightmares per night on Earth. I'm not supposed to know that the Afghan boy he shot on his last deployment, the one that brought him spinning into my life, looked just like my son, but smaller and less lucky. And his mother, who is less lucky than me, must know all these things too.
And now a final poem.
Amma, what do women want? Stiff Doc Martens, billowing silk, shalwar kameez, hemp bracelets, brown eyes, rimmed cover girl black. Soft cheeks, vixen lips, cleavage cleft and long necks. At the Muslim Community Center, our mothers watch. Envious, ashamed, our bodies like theirs and alien. They block our periphery with headscarves, teach us to move shoulder to shoulder, bending at the waist, hands flying to thighs, crossing the heart, index fingers stabbing the devil, spines curled over femur bones, forehead to prayer hall carpet, face right, then left, greet angels in unison. Led by the hungry men whose desires we must somehow learn to manage from behind.
The voice of Seema Reza. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, with support from the Snippet Fund. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.